So, you know, church services and things like that, the vicar or the minister often says, you know, if you're able to, please stand.
Hmm.
I don't know if you say that during, you know.
Sometimes, yeah.
Yeah. I was at a wedding the other day, which I'll talk about in a minute. It was a lovely wedding.
Hmm.
But the bloke leading it, who was great, he kept saying, after we'd sung, he kept saying, if you're able to, please sit.
Oh, really?
And I thought that was slightly confusing because we had, in fact, been sitting.
Most people can sit, can't they, on the whole?
Yes. I was really tempted to just say, no, I'm sorry, I can't do that, and stand through the whole thing. Just say, I'm not able. I can't bend my knees. I just can't. The best I can do is lean against something. I can't really do anything else.
That's bizarre.
Welcome, everybody, to episode 296 of the Mid-Faith Crisis podcast. My name is Nick Page, and there, after it has to be said, some difficulty getting him set up, yes, is Joe Davis.
Hello. Please be seated if you're able.
Thank you. I'm sorry I'm not able.
That is bizarre. That's great.
He was brilliant. He was great. He was absolutely fantastic, but there was this odd bit, you know.
Yeah.
I don't know whether it's because it also they had this really sort of quite lively, charismatic worship band. And so maybe he thought people were just too excited
to sit down. No.
I'm sorry, I'm just too fidgety. I'm too full of the joy of the Lord. Anyway, so we got you set up now. Yeah, it was a bit technologically challenging, wasn't it?
It was. Audio hijack sometimes can be frustrating. That's all I'm going to say. Yeah,
I think you're exhibiting what my younger colleagues at work, a spirit of ageism, if I'm honest, sometimes refer to as boomer behaviour.
But I'm not a boomer. I'm a Gen Xer.
Oh, well, you have all the characteristics of a boomer. but this is like when your phone goes off or when you text the wrong person or when you're just mystified by technology. I think you have a lot of that.
Okay, fair enough. You may be right.
Anyway, how are you?
I'm not too bad. I've been swimming in the sea because it's been a bit hot. That's been lovely. Also, I'm going to be filming tomorrow, filming this little sort of start of a promo about the TV programme, Faith in the 21st Century, or whatever we end up calling it. So I'm doing that with beloved friend Ash. We'll see where that goes.
Wow.
I know.
Where are you going to film it?
We're going to Hove initially.
Okay.
To film with someone. So, I mean, you know, this isn't going to happen, but I still feel I ought to try. So that's why we're doing it.
Mm. You're going to be too big for this podcast, aren't you? You're going to be a sort of...
Wow.
Bigger than the next David Attenborough, the next National Treasure.
I think so. I think it's almost inevitable, isn't it?
It's really.
And... Yeah, I mean, you know, it's just one of those life is ticking by. Felt a bit griefy recently. It's funny, isn't it? We stopped talking about grief after a few months because you think, oh, you don't want to talk about that again. It's going, but, you know, for those who are grieving, it's not something you get over quickly, is it? It rears its ugly head every now and then. I think that analogy that we used at the time of an old computer that's running tons of programs in the background and going ever slower. And occasionally, I think... I don't really understand why I feel miserable. I've got no reason to feel a bit miserable or that nothing's really wrong. And it is that grief is running in the background.
Interesting.
So, you know, that goes on. But no, good. I saw some friends, some joint friends of ours who are beloved podcast listeners, friends, listeners, companions. We'll come on to that in a minute.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So that's been going on. How are you, my friend?
Yeah, really good, thank you. Yeah, as I said, went to the wedding, which was wonderful. It was joyful. It was brilliant, actually, because it was in Ensham, where I used to live, with old friends. And but the groom was from sort of Nigerian background, from Hackney.
Okay.
So it had this amazing sort of cultural mix of rural Oxfordshire and inner London sort of Hackney.
Cool.
And I thought in a week where, you know... people have been trying to divide us left, right and centre and, you know, all that kind of stuff. It was wonderful. It was really brilliant to see
that is
cultures
great.
Coexisting happily and friendlily and loving each other. It's great. Brilliant. Yeah. So wonderful. It was wonderful.
That's a tonic. Great.
What else? Oh, I've been fumigating the house because Bill has had... Well, there's been a lot of fleas about, let's put it that way.
Oh, Bill.
I know. And so you have to kind of spray everything and then open the windows and, oh, it's awful. I don't like doing it. But it means you just go mad with this stuff. And for some reason, they bite me, but they don't bite Claire. I don't know why. It's just perhaps I'm more tender. I don't know.
No, maybe.
And then I don't know. I've been reflecting on it because it doesn't seem like long since we recorded. Seems like a couple of days, and yet it's a week, and time seems to be going past too quickly for my liking, really. Especially the summer. I don't really like that. So I'm trying to think about ways to drag it out a bit more.
Good luck with that. Yeah.
Well, I suppose listening to this podcast can help, isn't it? I mean, that was must make life feel longer, I suppose. Anyway, yeah, apart from that, it's been quite quiet, really. Haven't done a lot. Pottering along, waiting for my holiday, which comes up in a couple of weeks. So in a couple of weeks' time, we'll be taking, I'm sorry, listener, we'll be taking another little, maybe a slight mini break.
We will. But I tell you what, I am going to be interviewing the lovely John Philip Newell next week on his new book, The Great Search. And as you know, he's a really wonderful author, and I know you appreciate me interviewing wonderful authors. I'm glad you're being very childish now, aren't you?
I always love it when you talk to successful authors. I'm not at all. What's the besetting sin of number four in the Enneagram?
Envy.
That's it. Yeah, that's the one. Right. Now, that'd be great. Looking forward to that. Good. Well, we might as well crack on with it because, you know, our time's going by quickly.
It is. So let's get straight on to feedback. And first on the subject of what to call listeners or friends to the podcast, David says, having been binge listening to the last few episodes, and the last one you talked about an acronym for listeners / potential threats / friends, he says, seeing a definition for radical as being as pertaining to ongoing to the root, intrinsic, inherent, I wondered whether companions, radicals and pilgrims plus might work, or I don't even need to say it, do I?
Companions, radicals and pilgrims. Yes. Plus. I love it. I love the acronym. Yeah. Yeah. It's very good.
So there we go. That's a suggestion from David. And James said, dear friend, I'm surprised that nobody has pointed out that those who like concise Christian commentary are surely pith heads. Can we call our listeners pith heads?
Well, the thing is, I'd love to, but to be honest, they are rarely pithy. You know, we're always urging pith, but they rarely achieve it.
No, they take the pith, don't they?
They do. They take it and throw it away.
Now, listen, on that subject, so I spoke with our mutual friends, the lovely Tim and Charlotte, this week, and they said something. Well, yes, hello, Tim and Charlotte. They said we should simply call the listeners the 17.
Oh, I like that.
I thought that was quite a good idea.
I like that. It has a kind of mystique about it, doesn't it?
It does.
So it makes them feel a bit like the Illuminati, as if there's this secret council of listeners that gets together and decides things.
Exactly it does. That's exactly it. So I think that could be the winner.
I think it could be. But you could say the company of 17. And it'd be like one of those sort of strange medieval things where it's the 25, but actually there's 350 of them.
Yes, and we could have a gathering of the 17 from time to time.
It does sound like one of those organisations that people think are running the world. It really does.
Exactly. We might get investigated by the, the FBI or something.
Yeah, or we'll have certain sort of people who wear foil on their heads writing articles about us, as if we're controlling things, the power behind it. The 17. Very good. Thank you, Tim and Charlotte. I like that a lot.
So to all our companions, radicals, pilgrims, friends, listeners, welcome. You are the 17.
Thank you. Yeah, and you sounded like Claudia Winkleman there with the traitors.
Thank you.
You are. I am a loyal or whatever they were. I can't remember. Anyway, very good. Well, so we're going to have a couple of bits of feedback this week, I think, aren't we, on the topic of belonging. We thought we'd maybe talk about that for a little bit. Because I raised it a couple of weeks ago, but we haven't really sort of talked about it a lot. And it is one of those perennial questions that people ask in mid-faith crisis, you know, should I stay or should I go? As St. Joe Strummer so pithily put it.
And you know, and that sense of, you know, I just don't feel I belong here anymore, you know. So it's, where do you belong? So Harriet wrote in, said, "Dear Joe and Nick, it was interesting to consider after your last episode the idea of not belonging as freedom," which you may remember is something you said. "Belonging slash not belonging is so subjective. And for me personally, I can always look around in my church and see someone who belongs more than I do, so that my faith becomes clouded by issues of whether I belong and how much. It brings to mind the scene in Mark's gospel when immediately after Jesus has told his disciples that he will be killed and rise again, all they're concerned about is whether they can have the best places next to him in heaven, i.e. who belongs the most. That said, those of us who carry around a feeling of not belonging in a church that is very close to our hearts shouldn't underestimate the energy it takes to try to overcome it, maybe in particular when you know that however loving and kind people are, you have a difference that they view as brokenness. As you have said before, if a community is toxic, it's probably time to leave, but sometimes it's hard to judge. What is my responsibility, and is the relationship between me and my church one that will ultimately bring good if I work at it, or one that is insidiously harmful? Sometimes our constancy in turning up might build bridges that we never see, or sometimes we might dearly love and appreciate our community, but from time to time still need a rest break. It probably goes without saying that we should take our responsibility seriously to be gentle with others in all the ways that they may feel a sense of not belonging in different seasons of life, whether seen or unseen. Thanks as always for your thought-provoking discussions. A listener slash friend, Harriet." Well, Harriet, part of the 17.
Thank you very much, Harriet. I think there's loads in there to think about. I'd like to start, I guess, by thinking about that idea of, you know, what's the line between toxicity or non-toxicity, or what's the moment when you feel, you know, you can't make a difference? And for me, I suppose that would be one of the defining things. I've never felt particularly, you know, having driven out. Well, I've never felt driven out of any community, and I've never been driven out of any community.
Oh, you want to try? It's great fun.
No, I'm sure people have wanted it, but somehow my complete lack of sensitivity has enabled me to override that. But, you know, I suppose one of the questions for me is always, what difference can I make here? How can I have a positive influence? And there might be a point where you feel, not in fact that the place is particularly damaging to you, but there's just, you can't do anything. There's nothing you can bring to it. There's nothing they need from you. You know, I don't know whether that's a sign of whether it's time to belong somewhere else. The fact that you might be able to bring something new to another group. Really.
And it does depend, I think, how you leave. I mean, sometimes I think people go to church and are a bit bored. But if all you are is a bit bored, like, you can focus on other things, like the relational side of being there with a community and all that. So you can find. But if you're coming out consistently angry week by week, I don't think that's good. That is not good for you over a long time. All right, you can get away with it once or twice. You know, someone says does a stupid sermon or foolish talk, or, you know, the drummer kicks off with a solo or whatever it is.
Oh, Lord.
put him back in his plastic box. That's what I say.
Please. Do they still have those? Do they still have the plastic box things that they sit behind?
You're asking the wrong guy. But for years they didn't have them. And then suddenly it became very popular to just encase them in plastic.
I always thought it would make it more exciting if the plastic filled up with water.
Yes, exactly. Yeah,
you know, and the drummer in the end was having to escape like Houdini. Anyway, sorry, I interrupted.
No, well, it was a great email. Thank you, Harriet, and thought-provoking. I think we may pick up on some similar things when I talk about Han. Now, listen, I don't know whether to call this person Han or Hannes. Forgive my ignorance on how to pronounce H-A-N-N-E-S. But anyway, I'm going to say Hannes. Hannes,
okay.
writes in, says, "Dear friends slash talkers, dear Joe and Nick, my British friends slash teammates tell me it's always good to start with an apology. Two are even better." He says, this is good, he's been advised well. "So first, please forgive me for mistreating your language. English isn't my mother tongue. Second, please forgive me for being particularly clumsy because I'm writing this on my phone. I didn't want to bring my computer with me for a bike ride along a long German river." This is already very impressive, isn't it, Frank?
Oh, it is, yeah.
He says, "The comment about belonging touches on the very thing I've been pondering for the last few hundred kilometres." I mean, say no more, Hannes. You have our respect. He says, "Yeah, the last few hundred kilometres. Because at the same time and with the same church, I both belong to it and I do not belong to it. I belong because I really love the people there and have made some good friends. I mean, real friends. On the other hand, both my theology and my spirituality are quite different from what my church promotes. Actually, a big reason why I continue to go to that church is that precise fact that on the one hand, I get their perspective that is different from my own, and I don't ever want to believe that I don't need to be complimented. On the other hand, I can bring a perspective that is different from theirs, and I'm amazed and deeply grateful that my being different is actually appreciated. The thought that's been following me along my cycling tour, is my not belonging actually detrimental to me? You see, deep down there are thoughts of not only being different and of not belonging, but also of being better, smarter, more advanced. Nothing wrong, of course, with having convictions both in theology and spirituality, but if these are coupled with a sense of superiority, it can result in a dangerous mix. I'm wondering how much this mix keeps me from facing and accepting actually helpful and necessarily challenges and corrections, the very thing I know I need. I'm afraid I'm quite capable of finding good or twisted arguments against issues I don't want to face. So, my friends slash readers, I belong. Help my unbelonging. I don't belong. Help my belonging. I wonder what your thoughts are on this. If I was capable of explaining my conundrum, and now back on my bike and simply follow that river towards its source, there may be good advice in this simple metaphor. Regards, Hannes."
Well, I mean, that is a brilliant email.
That is very good. It's better English than I'm capable of.
I was going to say, yeah. I mean, please don't ever worry about mistreating the English language when you listen to this podcast, after all, which is a podcast dedicated to it. I just think there's so much good stuff in there. I really like that phrase, I belong, help my unbelonging. Mm. Kind of, for me, that is absolutely how I feel sometimes about church. That I feel I'm part of the church. I want to be part of that river he talks about, that stream of the Christian church, and yet you don't feel that you quite fit. And I wonder if that's just an incredibly common experience, to be honest. I wonder if we always belong and we don't belong.
Yes, I wonder if there's anyone walking around feeling, I really belong here.
Yeah.
I think you do have fleeting moments, but I'm not sure it's a sort of... Do you ever permanently feel like you belong? I don't know. Maybe you do.
It's a bit like being in a family. You feel you are part of that family, a very strong part of that family, but you're always aware that what makes you different within that family as well.
Yes, exactly right.
So I think there's always that feeling. And in fact, it's baked into Christianity anyway. I mean, Christianity is the essence of Christianity, is partly that kind of liminality, that betweenness, that we're in the world, not of it, and we're living in these times and we're waiting for the end time. There's a whole load of this stuff that we're never really at home.
And I liked what he was saying about the danger of feeling spiritually superior and actually needing to be challenged by being around people who are different. And one thing that I think so many of us are guilty of is we sit in our own echo chambers all the time, and actually the church at its best really ought to be a very diverse group of people with often, I would imagine, quite strongly opposing views, and yet somehow what you're doing there, I mean, I like Brian McLaren's language, it's a laboratory of love, it's a school of love. We're coming to church to learn to love people who aren't like us. I think that's a very healthy attitude, and great that Hannes here is recognizing and saying, I need them and they need me, actually. Yeah.
So I suppose I wanted to talk to you really about what do we gain and what do we lose by staying or going, by belonging or not belonging?
That's a good question.
And what you feel you lost or what you feel you've gained, and likewise, you know, for myself to reflect on what where I am with it. So I suppose, yeah, I just want to fling that question out to you straight away. What do you some of the things I think you lose by not belonging are what you just said, people different to yourself. But that can be, you know, that can be quite a dangerous thing as well, just keeping in touch with those people. If you feel totally different, it's perhaps not helpful. I don't know.
I mean, and I suppose my question within that is, if there are people you don't agree with and who are very different to you attending the same church, how much time do you actually spend with? Do you mean you just say hello to them on a Sunday? In which case, I wouldn't really call that community. I mean, I've got a friend along the road, Naz, who runs the fish and chip shop. You'd be surprised to hear I see him quite regularly. He's an elder at the local mosque. I feel like he is a friend. I know him pretty well. I've spent hours talking to the guy. Mm. He certainly wouldn't go to the church, but I feel like I have a more meaningful relationship with him because I've taken the time to talk with him. So I don't know. It can be a bit of a smoke screen, I think, sometimes to say, oh, yeah, I go to church. We're so diverse. If actually you're just spending time with the same clique within the church, you know, you could still be in your own little echo chamber within it, I suppose, is my point there.
Well, what about the other point about the different perspectives then? Because I think that's pretty valuable. I think that what Hannah said there about gaining different perspectives within the church, I think that's pretty powerful. But I suppose it depends on how far those perspectives are allowed to
be said. You're a lot more noble and Christ-like than I am. I find them irritating.
This is true.
I just find those people very annoying who don't think the same way. No, you're right. And I don't know how much I can assess. I think that one of the things you gain in leave, not belonging, is a real freedom to question and to read diverse. And certainly some of the people I read, I don't agree with. And some I do. And some the church, I think, would agree with, and some they wouldn't. And, you know, those don't always overlap. So I don't know. It's difficult, isn't it? That different perspective. Am I allowing people who are different to me to challenge me? Well, you do.
Well, I do, but I have similar reactions. I mean, sometimes, you know, as you know, I can take any amount of theological differences, but if someone gets a historical fact wrong, I think I'll take them outside and stone them. But I don't think, to be honest, within church the different perspectives come along very often.
No,
because churches are built around similar perspectives.
Yeah,
that's how they.
Exactly.
That's how denominations work. You know, they're built around this. But when they do come along, I think it's really striking. And and when somebody, where you hear a sermon that changes your attitude on something, genuinely, it doesn't happen very often. But when it does happen, it's very powerful. And of course, if you weren't there, you would never hear it. And if you're left listening to something else, I don't know how likely you are on YouTube or on podcasts.
Podcasts.
To hear that kind of stuff. Well, you might do,
Yeah, I think you will. So I don't know. This is quite ambivalent so far, isn't it? Because on the summary, we're saying, well, yeah, maybe. And then, no, not really.
I'm still prone to hang in there for that I hear enough stuff that makes me think. Even stuff that I've heard before, in a way, you rethink it. But it's only part of the mix, I have to be honest.
Okay.
What about the idea of sacrifice? You know, you were saying earlier about, you know, well, you don't go to church, but you being bored is not necessarily a reason to leave or whatever. But you know, what about the idea of sacrificing, laying down what you want in order to serve and be with others?
I don't think you stop serving people just because you leave the church. You just serve people in your community and friends and the people you come across. Again, you know, it's a mistake to think everyone who goes to church serves people and everyone who doesn't go to church doesn't. So, you know, I think about the people I serve.
Mm.
I don't know. I mean, I don't... In some ways, I don't talk to as many sort of little old ladies, perhaps. I used to, and I actually did used to very much enjoy talking to the little old ladies. They were they were actually a genuinely wonderful part of my experience. I would certainly count that as something I miss. I like the bit of social interaction. It's not very deep. You know, people always say, oh, no, you know, it's all so frothy and I can't bear small talk and everything.
Right.
Well, try going a whole day without any small talk. And yeah, it's quite depressing. Yeah. I mean, it's that Joseph Myers search to belong. You belong in different areas. And, you know, I quite like the social nature of going to a large group on a Sunday. And there was lots of hellos and welcomes and goodbyes at the end. And, you know, there was a bit of chit chat. And actually, once a week, that's OK. I think I do kind of miss that. Now it's just down to the people I work with and the people I meet in my community and then the service and down the pub and all the rest of it. So that serves that purpose. It's not quite the same as the Sunday church service.
See, I think this depends a lot on character, on who you are as a person, because I think for you, as we talked before, you're naturally outgoing, ebullient, you know, friendly, extrovert.
Yeah.
I think it's good for me to be put in positions where I talk to people I wouldn't normally talk to.
Yeah.
And to have to sort of rub along. And I just wouldn't do what you do. I think if I left the church community, I would turn in on myself a little bit.
Would you not just be a regular at the local and the cricket club and the dog walkers and the
But I don't have that ability that you have. I don't make connections easily that way. I never have. I don't have that ability. I can, apart from anything else, I can never remember anyone's name. I've met them before, but I have no idea who they
are. Write it down in your phone. Write it down in your phone. Person with white dog.
Yeah, but I don't know who you are. I mean, who the heck are you? I've talked to you every week. I've no idea. So I think maybe looking at your character itself and saying, well, you know, does this do me good or does it help them? What about the collective? A friend of mine was talking to the other day about the individual versus collective, how we're an individualistic society, but the biblical society is a collective society. It's a communal society.
Yeah.
They don't really think individualistically. And there's something for that, I think. There's something for sort of worshipping together with other people.
That
I think is quite powerful.
I think that's, for me, that's one of the biggest holes. That's an area I really miss. That sense of being part of a tribe, that's in part of a kind of force for good in the community or force for good in the world. And that sense of we come together to, you know, I always love that analogy as the church is the campfire, you're an army.
Mm.
But you come together at the campfire and you sing your songs and you tell your stories and someone gives an inspirational speech and then out you go onto the battlefield again. I think that was quite a healthy view of the church. I suspect that much of church life became about, we're really here to do a campfire.
Yes.
And we forgot the bit about going out on the mission paper.
Yes.
But there's something very special, I think, when you feel like you're a people of mission and purpose and you come together and there's that collective kind of zing. I miss that. I do miss that. In fact, I was talking to, I said I met with some podcast listeners up at NEP, or a pub on the NEP estate. And we were saying, actually, next Easter, we want to go to NEP and we want to do an Easter service at the Hammer Pond there and do that, because that would be good for us. We all want that. And we'll invite anyone who wants to come join us in. But that felt like the right thing for us to do. But that's Easter. So that's like, whatever it is, 6 months away or more. I miss that sense of regularly being part of that community, that sort of thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, you don't have to wait until Easter, of course.
No.
Do it earlier.
Any time we darn well like, just take someone to organise it. I know.
Ah, okay.
Churching.
No, I think that was what I really missed in COVID, actually.
Yeah.
Was the two things, so sort of going into the building and particularly sharing communion together.
Yeah.
Taking the Eucharist together. For some reason, that really hit me. That sort of communal aspect. And I think that is very powerful. I was thinking about this when I was thinking about, well, what did we miss? One of the things that the church misses is you, if I'm honest. You know, this is why I think it's difficult. You know, I think, and I hate to be sincere here, But I think you are a great loss in a way.
Wow.
To the church.
Tell that to the other church leaders.
Well, I'm not saying you would have been at all easy to work with. No, I don't mean that you're not in the church, because the church is bigger than what we're talking about anyway. But I do mean that, if people like yourself don't feel they have a home, I think that is a loss to sort of the established church, as it were. I think that's a shame.
Right, I mean, and just to clarify, I don't see myself as being outside the church, I mean, big C, just out of a local church, small C.
Yeah, yeah.
At the moment, I see myself part of the church and part of what the divine's doing in the world. It's just an interesting stage in my own life, and I suspect in the life of the church, where at the moment, is to use political language, it's not fit for purpose.
Okay.
And I just want to work out a way of, how we make it fit for purpose, I guess. It's tricky being in government, isn't it?
It is. I'm not trying to sort of guilt trip you or anything like that. I just think that it's a shame, because I saw you, in your heyday.
Yeah.
Being a really good, I thought, really good church leader. Really good for that community.
Well, thank you. And I enjoyed it. And I think, to put it in layman's terms, I think the ordinary people of the church did miss me. They told me they did. I assume they weren't lying. And I missed them. I missed it. But I think where you have a leadership that says you have to think this on this issue.
Yeah, sure.
And you can't, you've just got to go. That's a different thing, isn't it? Mm. And the reason I didn't go to another church is because I think, at the moment, that's just going to happen all over again. Let's not be silly about this.
Well, I'm certainly not trying to sort of get you back into ministry, because I think the church has got enough problems. But I just think that's a shame. It is a shame when I meet so many Christians who feel that they can no longer contribute to a local church.
Yes,
and I'm not saying whose fault it is or
wrong.
It's not my position.
You're absolutely right.
I just think that is a shame to lose those gifts, but there we go.
And the church over the past few decades has lost millions of people. So
it has.
Exactly.
So look, that's what we've lost in a way. That's what you can lose by not belonging. Some of it we're clear on, some of it less so. What do you think you've gained by not belonging?
I have gained some stuff. Peace. This is a very foundational level. I think I genuinely love Sunday mornings.
And Sunday
evenings. I this is a terrible thing to say, maybe, but I love not being tied down to the sort of, what was at times monotony of it. And, I enjoy the thing. I miss the people and I miss the thing, but I don't miss organizing loads of stuff and working and things. I'd rather enjoy sitting in my garden with a cup of coffee and a croissant on a Sunday morning. That's no bad thing. And also that opportunity to see people and to relate at a deeper level than you would in that sort of, I said I quite enjoy the sort of social gathering and the small talk and everything, but it's also great embracing now the opportunity to meet with people. So we quite often go out for breakfast with people on a Sunday, and we would do, deeper talking than you would do at the end of a church service over coffee from green cups.
Isn't that interesting? Because I think that's something that I feel as well, that actually the time for real interaction and talking deeply to people, church doesn't seem to be able to provide that. You think, surely that's one of the key things it should provide.
Yeah.
But I think so often church is so much more concerned with talking at you.
Yes.
That it doesn't really want to hear from you. And maybe some people don't want to contribute in that way as well. We shouldn't assume that everybody wants to share, deeply.
Yeah, I started a service once called Breakfast Church, and it was just that we had breakfast together and we had a discussion. And I was meeting with some old friends recently. It's sort of changed format now, and it's not so discussional. And they were saying that, the thing I miss most about church is discussion.
Mm.
So that's, you know, where do you go to discuss these kind of big issues? And the answer for them was, well, nowhere really. So, yeah, there might be a good reason to organise places where people can just come and meet and chew around in a non-threatening environment some of these big issues that we face both in the church and in society, you know, mix it up.
I think you do gain that kind of sense of space sometimes. You know, I always think when I don't go to church on Sunday, if I'm doing something else, yeah, the day sort of opens up. And I find that there's something about the time which we do church that just seems to clamp everything down, you know, because you do it right in the middle of the day, basically. And so, you know, there's no reason why I couldn't go somewhere else that has an 8:30 service apart from getting up, which would be tricky, obviously.
And I think for many people, you know, there's a sense of a loss of, I mean, this sounds really harsh, and I don't mean it harshly, but there's a loss of embarrassment. You know, if you're someone who goes to a church where, for example, women aren't allowed to lead, I mean, I can't believe these places exist in the 21st century, but that just claws at you, doesn't it? And I'm a man, so what it feels like if you're a woman, write in and let me know. But it goes against everything, you know, that you feel you stand for. And similarly, there was this headline this week in the news, wasn't there? I always feel self-conscious about some minister who's been paid off some six-figure sum, some vicar or bishop, I can't remember which. Did you hear that news item? You probably didn't.
No.
But he's been paid off a six-figure, but it was well known that he was, you know, allegedly doing things he really shouldn't have done with young people. So it's another horror story. And, you know, those things always made me feel embarrassment, especially on the occasions when you don the dog collar. You're wearing the uniform of the church, and you know that there's a certain sector of society that is bandying you all in with them. And that's very difficult. And I still don't know how to handle that. It's just hard. It's, you know, you're guilty by association, I suppose. And some of that feels good to have left behind, particularly, you know, you're anti-gay or you're anti, you stand for this or you stand for that. That's, you know, that's a horrible, ugly side. It's not true, of course, because the majority of people in churches aren't those things. But, you know, you do gain a freedom from that guilty by association thing.
I suppose it cuts both ways, though, doesn't it? You know, you're not associated with the sort of embarrassing stuff, but equally you're no longer associated with some of the good stuff.
No. Maybe. Yeah, exactly.
You can't really pick and choose. I mean, I want to be associated with the kind of heroic and deep faith that I encounter with some of my other work. You know, I want to be part of that stream and the stuff I write about. I want to be part of that. I have to accept that actually along with that comes actually a lot of people who don't behave in that way. But I really, that's an interesting point there. You gain freedom from embarrassment. I'm reminded of, I think, is it Rory Stewart, the guy who does the podcast, used to be the Tory party, was asked if he wants to go back in the Tories, and he said, well, no, never, because I then have to defend and associate with those people. And that's exactly, you know, the liberation you feel when you no longer have to stay part of that. I think it's possible to get that within the church anyway. I've talked a lot about the time when I sort of woke up and thought, oh, I don't have to believe that line because I'm not a vicar. That's great. So there is a certain freedom in there.
Yeah, for sure.
I suppose, you know, just trying to land this, it's a shame, isn't it, that we can't have the Gaydens within the church? And what are the ways that we could perhaps reshape church to do that? I know with Soul Place, as you used to do, what part of that was an attempt to do church a different way and at a different time. And yeah. So, you know, you were attempting in a way to keep all these gains and to minimise the losses.
Yes, exactly. And let's be honest, you and I have so many friends, clergy friends, who are doing fantastic jobs. They are seeking to minimise the bad stuff and maximise the good stuff.
Absolutely.
You know, one church it was obviously Brighton Pride, massive event, you know, and there was the church there supporting with their rainbow banners and everything and saying, you're welcome here and you're very much a part of our city as we are. And, you know, it gave such a strong message of that inclusive church. I thought it was really beautiful and necessary and a much needed voice in Brighton. So, you know, there are churches doing, and that's just one example. There are others. I mean, we all know all our friends are doing incredible work, great stuff, often in the face of huge discouragement. And, you know, we've said before, you know, that subject about should I stay or should I go? I think if you've been hurt badly, or if in going you are continuing to be hurt, it's probably time for you to leave.
Yeah.
That's not a healthy thing for your own soul. If you're just bored, that's different. I think maybe it's worth persevering, maybe it isn't. But yeah, the church does so much good, and that's still true. Of course it is. And we would never want to paint it any other way.
Great. I mean, I think it's a difficult subject to summarise, but maybe we can turn some of these into questions that people can think about. You know, so when you think about your own church or your own Christian community, I guess some questions to ask are, does it bring you into contact with people different than yourself? Mm. Help you think outside the box? Does it bring different perspectives at times? Is there space for that? Are there ways for you to serve within it to help others? Does it have that powerful sort of collective worship of any kind, whatever form you most resonates
sure,
with you?
Sure, yeah.
You know, is there a sense of community and family? And yeah, are you capable still of staying within that and serving within that community? Because I think if you can answer yes to those, or qualified yes to most of them, then you're in a pretty good place, really.
Yeah. Well, and yeah, let's genuinely throw this out. I mean, to the 17 who are, we know you're listening, I'd love to hear from you. What do you think you've gained through staying in church? What have been the pluses for you? And if you've left church, what have been the pluses for you, and what do you miss? You know, that would be lovely to hear your views. We've just sort of said some of our thoughts, but it'd be great to get some more feedback on this. So please do write in to joe@midfaithcrisis.org. Love to hear your views on that. Now, listen, we were going to come on to another important email that I put on our Facebook page, which is why I'm mentioning it. We will discuss that next week. A faith fit for the 21st century. It's coming up next week. Thank you.
And can I just say thank you to Harriet and Hannes for two excellent emails.
Fabulous.
Makes our job a lot easier when
Doesn't
we have that
it?
Kind of quality. Yeah.
Exactly.
You know, really good. Thank you. So if you would like to write in, please do. Pith is good. We like pith.
We do.
But writing in is good anyway. So however you want to do that would be welcome. Thank you to everyone who listens. Thank you to those who support the podcast. That's absolutely brilliant.
So much.
And means a lot to us. If you want to support the podcast, you can go to the website and find out ways to do that. We will be back with you next week. Assuming that I haven't sort of given up on this and sought to find some gains somewhere else. I don't know, you know.
Exactly.